jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the second pre-season Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2015 season. My name's Marcus, and it's good to be back again with FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus. How you going?
Very good, thanks. Enjoyed tooling with my team over this first week. How about you, mate?
Yeah, me too, mate. This better be a good show, though. I'm missing I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, so I have high expectations.
Hope you got that in record then, Mark. Just before we dive into things, shout out to our social media pages, facebook.com/supercoachcoach and Twitter, we're at supercoachcoach. So you can ask us questions throughout the week and we'll try and get to it during the podcast next week. Got I think about 5 or 6 questions from our community this week via social media. So thanks to those of you who asked questions this week. And
we will be relying on you guys throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly a part of the show we really enjoy, Mark, isn't it? Getting those questions in and answering.
Very much so.
Yep. And just another reminder to those of you who are looking to join the Supercoach Coach Veterans, runners-up last year in the overall league, you can click on the link on supercoachcoach.com.au, find an application form there, and also you'll be able to find league codes to join our Supercoach Coach leagues, as well as an invitation to our Supercoach Coach group. So that's the best way to get involved in our communities, face off against each other, represent the site, and keep tabs on each other throughout the year, Mark.
Yeah, and we will be taking applications for our ranked leagues over the next few weeks.
So we'll just launch into the show now, Mark. To start, I thought we'd answer a couple of questions from Twitter. They're just follow-up questions from last week, so regarding some of the rule changes. So the first one, Mark, is from Curtis. He's asking, with the R4 gone, will you be using another loophole for captaincy, or will you be getting your captain right every week?
Well, I liked the idea of just getting my captain right every week. My plan at the moment is Mason Cox on the bench in my third ruck position, so I can use that if Collingwood aren't playing early in the week. So I guess at this stage I do have a captain loophole in my rucks. If I end up going with a different strategy and there looks like a cheap rookie ruck playing, which is quite a possibility, I guess, then I guess I'm not going to be planning around it, and I'm going to be expecting that one of my players will be out probably most weeks after round two, really. There's normally one rookie that gets dropped or unexpected non-selection or injury or something like that. So I don't think that we're relying on just picking a non-playing rookie.
There is some division about that particular topic amongst the Supercoach community, whether or not you should intentionally bring a player in that you can use for the captaincy loophole because the points might be worthwhile.
Yeah,
I think we're very much in the camp of picking as many that provide value for your team.
Yeah, I think that we're looking for players on our bench that are actually going to make us money. If you're looking at a rookie that's going to score you 60 every week on your bench and get you money that you can make a big trade later in the season, my feeling is that that's stronger than picking a dual position player there that you can use as a ruck loophole.
I think a big reason not to do it is once injuries hit, when real catastrophe strikes, you don't really want to be stuck eating a donut because you intentionally picked a player for a loophole.
Sure, I think the strategy probably has some merit, and in certain circumstances, which one season will probably actually arise and the circumstances will be there, and it probably will be of value. I can see why people do it, but I just think on a balance of probabilities, you're better off going a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to Jester's question from Twitter again. He's asking about ruck strategy, but this time he's wondering whether we should allocate a forward to be a spare ruck. So you already mentioned that that's what you're going to be doing. Do you think
I call it the ding-dong strategy, bell chambers.
So that really only works with bell chambers, right, Mark? Is there any other forward ruck premium or even rookie that looks like is worth picking for our teams?
Sure, I guess the player that I've refused to say his name, that Port Adelaide guy, is probably an option that people could use, but ding dong, so obvious, why would you not go in that direction?
I tend to like the MPP, and it's really early days, so at the moment that's what I'm leaning toward as well, Jester, but to be honest, it's not absolutely crucial, I don't think, yeah. And I'll be happy to go into the season without it and then trading for short-term injuries, if so be
it. If there's a rookie that you can put on R3 that's playing, that probably makes having bell chambers less essential.
really important part about Supercoach, Mark, just being flexible. So we have our preferences, but you know, we'll see how the rest of the preseason pans out. And again, very important part of the ground. So understand why you guys are asking questions. It normally helps define the rest of your team, depending on how much you spend in your rocks. So
thank you for the follow-up questions from last week's show.
For this week's show, we're going to look at three main topics. We're going to look at whether or not you should pick Gary Ablett for your side, whether or not his huge price point is worth it, because he's priced at $734,000 to start the year. Then we're going to be looking at the early locks. So the one player in each position that Mark and I have chosen that we think are your best bet at this point in the preseason. So early locks, and then the last one, backline worries. So I've had a couple of questions from Twitter. Thank you to you guys. Wondering about what we're actually going to do with the backline, because the top end scoring potential is low and it looks like we might be thin on rookies as well. So we'll have a look at those three topics tonight. Main topic of discussion that we're going to move into, and a big one that we don't often have enough time to get into, but to Ablett or not to Ablett. I think this year is more relevant than ever, and that's why we're dedicating a bit more time to it. Only played 15 games last year, but of course in the games he played, absolutely crushed it. On track for a Brownlow medal, average 130, is it 6 or 7? But of course, returning from this season-ending injury, the fact that he's getting older, the fact that Gold Coast midfield will continue to develop and he might play more and more in the forward line. How do you view all these factors together, Mark? And do you think we should be playing with Ablett or keeping him out in our starting teams?
It's really interesting because in the past, I've always felt Ablett has been a little bit questionable, or it's going to be questionable eventually. But this season, everybody that I've seen asked has just gone lock in Ablett. It's an absolutely obvious pick. His average is so high. He's a perma-captain, and it's just been, everyone's been so certain about it that it kind of makes me a little bit worried. I almost want to not pick him just because everyone else is, and they're so sure about it in a time where there probably is doubt. But realistically, he's very high chance of making my starting team. There was talk at training yesterday that he was favoring his right shoulder and not really like going for marks with his left arm and not engaging that fully, but we're still a couple of months away from the start of the season, so that doesn't really bother me too much. He broke his 2K time trial record, I think, a little while ago. The Suns, you'd expect to improve. There's a lot of reasons to still pick him and expect him to do well. I think even if Rocket, as a new coach, says he wants him to play a little bit more up forward, we've seen Ablett in the past. He's capable of kicking 50 goals a season. Could probably go even higher than that. It will affect his scoring somewhat, but he'll still score awesome as a forward. At this stage, he's an absolute lock, but I'm open to the possibility of finding another solution. I've seen coaches in the past that if you spend the money wisely in not having Ablett and say Pendles at least matches Ablett for the start of the season, and you can spend the non-Ablett money in a couple of other places to improve your team, you don't actually end up losing out that much. It takes that cutting edge away from your team, but I've seen teams still ranked really highly without Ablett if they can make smart decisions with the money to spend elsewhere. I'm guessing that he's in your side, Marcus.
You know, Mark, I've been a huge Ablett fan, and most times he's brought up, I pretty much swat the question away, but I actually put this on the run sheet today because my just assumption is that if his first three games are relatively average, there's a big potential for him to drop a fair bit of value pretty quickly. You know, if you can manufacture a fast upgrade somewhere, which I tend to like to do, then you can jump on him pretty quickly anyway. It's just more looking at the value. I don't know if he's going to average 137. That seems a lot for him to be able to keep up. And I know there's no point doubting the champion, as we've learned from seasons past, but if we can find a option that is more reasonably priced that we think can match him, especially in the first few weeks, like you said, Mark, we've actually seen in the last two seasons, especially in last season, that you don't actually have to start Ablett to stay with the pack. You probably have to bring him in at some stage. It's a risk that I may be willing to take this year. At this point in time, I've actually been playing around with teams without Gary Ablett.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it comes down to draw a little bit. Opening up with Melbourne, Saints, Geelong, and then the Giants, it's hard not to see him going nuts in at least a few of those games if he's fit and playing.
That's true. I'm probably being too much of a doubter, Mark. But nonetheless, if you are not huge on the Ablett train, or if you're looking for an alternative, if we can find a guy who can average 130, Mark, and Rockliffe did average 132 last year, then Ablett is slightly less important, because a big reason for picking Ablett is because of the captaincy and the doubling of the points. But if you can find somebody else who can average 130, What do you reckon about that, Mark? Are you looking at maybe any other perma-captain options to replace him? Do you think Rockliffe, Pendlebury, Fife, or Selwood, for example, do you think any of those four could maybe step up?
I think the Pendles was going pretty close to matching Ablett for probably 2013, first half of 2014, and then Pendles picked up an injury, which he played through the rest of the season with. It's still affecting him a little bit, but he should be right for the season opener. I think Pendles is the obvious one, just because he's super consistent, really hard to tag. Maybe with Collingwood potentially dropping off a little bit, his scoring might drop off a little bit too, or maybe with Beams and Ball and Co. not there anymore, he might become even more important to the Collingwood midfield and score a few more points. I think that I would be fairly comfortable going into a season thinking that I'm going to be locking in Pendles as my perma-captain. And normally someone does go on a big run, and I guess Selwood and Fife are both very capable of that. And I probably like Fife out of the rest of them.
So Neil, or Neely underscore 23 on Twitter, he actually really wants to know about Rocky, Mark. He asked specifically, yeah, what are your thoughts on Rocky? Overpriced, or score more with Hanley out, or score less with Beams in the team? How do you feel about him? He's of course, priced very expensive, $710,000 after an average of $132,000 last year.
I feel a little bit reluctant to underestimate Rocky, because he just kept putting in massive scores in the back end of last year, just week after week after week in losses, and when he wasn't even getting any inside 50s. His ability to put on a huge score and just continue to rack up the touches was hugely impressive. So I'm a bit reluctant to underestimate him too much. With that said, I do think that he's overpriced. I do think that of the people at that price, there's a really good chance that he will potentially be cheaper at some point during the season. I think that he is someone that if you could get him a little bit cheaper, you'd be quite happy to have in your team, and he will be an upgrade target. Is he someone that I would start ahead of Gary Ablett? So, like, if I'm not starting Ablett, am I going to put in Rocky as my perma-captain? No, at this stage, I'm not willing to take that risk. Given the bulk of example we've seen from Ablett and the lack of example we've seen from Rocky, it's been such a short period, I'd be just backing in Ablett. Just the law of averages says that that's probably going to be what happens. And
yeah, agree with you there, Mark. I think, you know, Rocky's price point makes him very difficult because of Ablett. If you're going to spend that much, you might as well take the risk on Ablett. You know, we're talking about Ablett maybe dropping off, but if you're only saving $24,000 and you're going down to Rockliffe, who might not even hold it, then that risk makes no sense at all. So by that logic, I think it's hard to pick Rockliffe. Maybe you can think about, would you pick both of them? But, you know, then again, you don't really want to be spending that much money in two spots on your entire ground. So I think Rockliffe's actually quite hard to pick this year. And yeah, I think I'd agree with you. Out of those four, Fife does look like he has probably the best upward trend, considering he's the youngest. Selwood, I wonder, as a Geelong supporter, whether he can take it to the next level, but Geelong are very light on for support, so as the sole guy down there, he might struggle with some poorer games.
It's going to be a tricky midfield decision. I think that people are looking to take probably three of Ablett, Pendlebury, Rockliffe, Fife, and Selwood. Most teams that I've seen have probably three of them. You could get away with two. Look, I think that there's a good chance that they're all going to be, like, Pendlebury, Fife, and Rocky are going to average within a decent amount of points of each other. And I don't think you're going to go really, really wrong picking Rocky ahead of Fife, even though it's 50,000.
Two guys that we may consider talking about, Mark, Josh Kennedy. So if you picked him instead of Ablett, for example, you'd save a whopping 120K. So you might want to drop down from Ablett if you can save a bit more cash, or maybe even drop down to Gray, who, of course, at the end of last year just put on an absolute show. And he's at 597 with 111 average. Do you think these sorts of guys can hit 120? Can they be a good perma-captain option instead of G. Ablett?
When you phrase a question like that, I think it makes Ablett look very good, and it makes it very hard not to pick Ablett. I think Josh Kennedy could average more than he did last year. I think that Gray, if he can stay fit, could have another huge impact on games. But if you're looking at picking Gray versus Ablett, then I'm just going to take Ablett every time. I think that if I was going to not take Ablett, I'd look to be restructuring somehow, where instead of just getting a bit of a cheaper premium midfield, I'd look to get in like an extra premium into my team. So, like, say someone of Swallow's price and someone else around the 500,000, where you're actually getting an entire extra premium in your side to make up the difference between Ablett's score and the next closest premium. I mean, Robbie Gray, what an outstanding season last year, but if you're looking at it as Robbie Gray versus Gary Ablett, I know which way I'm going to go every time.
when you put it that way, Mark, doesn't really make too much sense to only save 120k for that level of risk. But, you know, maybe you might consider it if there were better value options, like you said, at the 500k mark. So to finish, Mark, Ablett or not to Ablett, you are in the...
Very much Ablett, but I am like you. I am willing to explore my options if something good came up.
Gonna put Ablett back into my team and see how our team looks like with him back in the side now, Mark. See how that goes. All right, next segment.
The early locks.
One lock from each position.
So we haven't talked about these yet, so we'll go through them slowly. In the back line, Mark, who do you have first?
Back line is really, really hard to pick because it's almost like there isn't any locks. There's
That's so bad.
There's no real good premiums that stand out, but the one to me that will definitely make my round one side is Michael Hibberd.
Wow, that's my same lock too, Mark. I picked him last year. He was in my team for a while.
He did, and I kind of wish that I had.
And so, happy to have him again in the team. Toward the end of the season, he kind of screwed me with a bit of short-term injuries and scoring dropping off a little bit. But what that means for this year is that he's only priced to average 91. And the guy, if, you know, stays injury-free, is capable of averaging 100, I think.
Well, I'm not sure that I'd go that far, but I think that there's a good chance he'll move up into the middle a bit this year. We've got a number of people competing for spots across the half-back line. I expect his main role to be in the back line, but yeah, I think that he does have 5 to 10 points in him and is a little bit underpriced and has shown consistency and talent. So, yeah, I like it.
Unlike a lot of defenders, Hibbard's low side isn't too bad. His troughs in his scoring aren't too low so that they shouldn't affect his overall average too badly. I think he mostly scores 80 pluses, which is the great thing about Hibberd. So that's why I see him potentially lifting. Whether he actually gets there's another story. But yeah, definitely a early lock for mine, especially like you said, Mark. Starve for options back there. The midfield's an interesting one, though, because it's the exact opposite. We're just
too many players to pick.
Too many. So I'm going to start off with mine. And I think I rated this bloke next to Ablett a couple of years ago, so the fact that he's dropped in price by, you know, about 100k or 150k off Ablett now, no surprise, Patrick Dangerfield is a lock in my team at this point. 560k, lost the DPP status, but he'll get more help from the Adelaide midfield, hopefully, or he'll just continue to get better. I think he's just one of the best in the game, and at that price, I can't say no.
Well, this isn't going to be a very interesting segment of the show, is it? Because I also had Dangerfield, completely agree there. even though he's been mainly a forward mid the last couple of years, I think that 567 is just insane value. He's a player that can easily start off the season with a bunch of 140, 150 scores and is unattainable after that. 567 is just a crazy price for Dangerfield. I couldn't pass that up. I don't really have any other locks amongst the premium mids. I mean, I'm almost certain to start with Ablett, but at some point I'm not going to, so he's probably less of a lock each year. But yeah, Dangerfield, absolute easy lock.
This might not be interesting, like you said. We're getting to the rocks now, and I have a sneaky feeling based on the prices, just the situations that we have in terms of going down to one bench, the changing of the effective hitouts, that we might end up with the same underpriced guy here. Is your guy Nick Nat for the rocks?
Absolutely, mate. 488,000. Did he start at 610,000 last year, about that? So he is underpriced. You got Cox retiring over the summer. He's got to come free of his injuries at some point, you'd think, and no reason why it can't be this year. He has great contested possession. Hit-outs to advantage is huge with Nick Nat because he just jumps over his opponents. So I think that early on, Nick Nat just makes a lot of sense in the ruck.
He's the exact player that you're looking for in the rocks. You don't want to be looking for guys that don't get touches. Nick Nat is the opposite of that. He's basically another midfielder in your team. You'll tackle, you'll get the posies, and you'll kick goals. So, and unlike all the other guys who played last season and therefore have an inflated price relative to this year, last year Nick Nat played injured, and so his pricing doesn't really reflect his true ability. So he's going to go up while most ruckmen are going to go down. And considering that we love Nick Nat, it's not a surprise at all that we've both locked him in.
I'll give a couple of honourable mentions here as well. I think that Bell Chambers is primed for this season. It's only like 300,000 after suffering with an ankle injury last year. And also Leuenberger coming back in. I'm not sure what his relationship with Stefan Martin's going to be, but he's also very, very cheap. So wouldn't surprise me if I actually start with all three of those guys with Bell Chambers up forward, or maybe even Matty Cruiser in there.
All right, Mark. Can we make it 4 from 4 in the forward?
I think
line?
The forward is the first picked player in the whole competition, isn't he?
Swanee.
You've got to have Swanee up forward.
Yeah.
If I literally had to pick the first player to pick at 464,000 in the forward line, Swanee would be it.
Yeah, yeah. Agree with you there. And honourable mention to Bunnell, because logic dictates, like you said, Swan is first picked in the team and all that. But I love his potential. I love that he's in the forward line. I love that he's primed for a breakout year. I love that Gold Coast should make the 8 this year, hopefully. He might just do some crazy things this year.
For the last topic of the week, we've got backline worries, Mark. So first question is...
Major headaches.
First one from Blair Dewsbury or Rick James 7 on Twitter. He's asking, are there any defensive options apart from Hibbert, Mark? So we just mentioned Hibbert, mentioned how much of a lock he is, and a bit of that was the absence of any options, Mark. So what do you think he can do if you don't like any of the other options?
I don't like them either. Premium defenders, you can just see a big problem with all of them. It's going to be tricky. My current defensive lineup has maybe 2 premiums in it, and it seems like a sort of year where maybe you gamble with a few more mid-prices in defense. Not necessarily because the mid-prices stand out, but because the premiums just don't. So I think that a lot of people will be running fairly cheap defenses this year. There's not a whole lot of rookies back there standing out at this stage. Hopefully we get a couple, because they could easily average as much as the mid-prices or the premiums. I think I'm thinking of players like Ibbotson, Waters, there's a lot of others, Lastuin, Whitecross. Yep. So there's plenty in the under 400,000 mark that you could afford to have a gamble with this year, because I don't see there being a huge difference between them and the premium defenders.
If the options are poor up at the top end, then it's best not to commit your resources there just because it works with your structure better. It's best to be flexible and try and find a team structure that avoids you losing or hemorrhaging money paying for Melcheski, who averaged 105 and has moved to the Gold Coast from the Sydney Swans. So I agree with you there, Mark.
If you're looking at the top like 15 backs, almost all of them are over 30 years old. So that put some doubts on their ability to play 22 games. Are they going to actually improve? It's like they're fully priced because you know what you're going to get from them. They're already at their top end. There's not a whole lot of value in a lot of those picks.
So if you can't find value in the top end, look for it somewhere in the middle. And even if it doesn't work out, it's better than losing money in the top end is the crux of it. We'll get into an actual backline show where we look at the options and try and identify some better ones for you guys. But in the meantime, we just want to give you some general guidance and ways to go about structuring up your team. So in the meantime, look for those mid-priced options that you like in the backline, and we'll be back for a backline show anyway, won't we, Mark?
We will indeed.
Last question for the week is from Tono ASZ on Twitter. And again, asking about the back line, and it's all about the worries, Mark. The backline rookies of all the lines actually looks the poorest for rookies. So how do you think that we're actually going to be able to structure up? Are we looking at many mid prices in the back line? Because there's no top end to pick from and no bottom end to pick from. I mean, surely we can't be picking 6 mid prices in the back line.
Really? Why not? I think this is one of the really cool things about Supercoach, and that is I don't think I've ever had a line like this before where I don't like any of the premiums and there's no rookies, which is really, in a sense, pushing me more towards value options in that position. I don't ever remember feeling pressures from both ways like that before. So, yeah, it means it's different every year and we get to make some unique decisions. My teams at the moment are probably hoping that there's going to be 3 rookies playing in defense. 3 rookies, 3 mid prices, and 2 premiums is where it's at the moment. But as I said, we're going to do a defensive show, and by then I might have refined that a little bit more precisely. But I think that it really is an opportunity to be creative this year, and backline could have a big influence on how teams go.
Man, I love a license to pick mid prices, Mark. That sounds right up my alley. I do tend to like picking mid prices in the back line anyway, just because of all the lines, it's easiest to straight swap to a premium because the premiums are the cheapest in the back line. So it doesn't really take much to straight swap. I mean, that's why I like the mid prices there. So hopefully a few more of them have a strong preseason and give us reason to actually pick them, Mark.
I guess the other side of that is that even if you get it wrong, the average between a mid-pricer and the premium is going to be less, the average difference. So you don't get punished quite as hard in the defense. Not that we're starting off the season advocating big mid-prices, just that is the early way that I've tried to resolve that situation.
It's a nice year to pick premium midfielders and premium forwards anyway. We won't be spending a lot of cash there. All right, Mark. Well, that wraps up topics that we had to chat about this week.
Second show's gone already. Was that worth missing? I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here.
Everybody, right, it absolutely so. Was. So I'm glad you all tuned in. Again, just want to plug our social media handles at SupercoachCoach on Twitter and Facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. Like and follow us there and get engaged. We'll be needing more questions from you guys throughout the preseason and the season proper. And again, don't forget the Supercoach groups, leagues, and all that sort of stuff, all that information on supercoachcoach.com.au. Mark?
Thanks for talking to me, mate. I'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Catch up.
See ya.